It's Monday, March 14th, 2016, and you're listening to Monday Morning Meetings on Migration, a conversation about migration and politics at the University of Amsterdam. I'm Darshan Vigneshwaran, and today we cross the Atlantic to discuss a topic that's probably in everyone's newsfeed right about now. After piling up impressive victories in the primaries, it looks highly likely that Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee for the US presidential elections. His election campaign has promised two major changes to immigration policy: fortify the US-Mexico border and increase efforts to deport unauthorized foreign residents. Here today to walk us through precisely what the first 100 days of a Trump presidency would entail is Austin Coker, joining us from the battleground state of Ohio, nonetheless. Hi, Austin.
Hi. Morning.
And what's it like to be there right now, as we've just had some new election results coming in, and it seems confirming a possibility of a Trump candidacy?
It does. Trump just won Michigan last night, which is one of our major states. There's a lot of delegates, so he just won that. And in something of an upset in the Democratic Party, Bernie Sanders won Michigan, just barely beating out Hillary Clinton. So the Democratic Party fight is still on, but the Republican Party seems pretty locked into Trump at this point.
It does. And so while a lot of the newspaper reporting and scholarly work on the issue of immigration control, and that's where I want to focus our discussion today, has had our eyes fixed pretty much firmly on the US-Mexico border. Now, for some time, you and your colleagues have been asking us to pay attention to internal enforcement and what's happening in that field. So just to start off with, could you walk us through precisely how a President Trump might attempt to deport 11 million people and what that would involve?
Sure. So like in the EU, one of the major transformations in U.S. immigration policy has been not just militarization of the border, but extending immigration enforcement authority throughout the United States, so that increasingly in the last 15 years, immigrants who are beyond the border are even more likely to come into contact with law enforcement and be detained and deported. And that's an authority that resides largely in the president. And so even though Congress in the United States makes the immigration authority and the president can't change much of that by him or herself, the president has a lot of authority to determine the amount of resources that are directed to immigration enforcement and how those resources are used. So I think, you know, whereas even 6 months ago, I think a lot of us who do work with immigrants were concerned about the Trump campaign, it didn't seem plausible, frankly. it seemed, frankly, too absurd to even make it in the Republican Party. But I would say in the last month or two, especially, there's really growing concern. And so I think what we've had to do is to actually step back and take a look a little bit more seriously at what might actually happen if Trump becomes president.
And what about some of these plans? I mean, he's offered to or suggested he's going to triple the internal enforcement regime, triple the amount of people who are conducting internal enforcement under federal authority.
Yeah, that's right. So because the U.S. has so many immigrants who are out of status within the country, the government has long admitted that there's no feasible way for the government to deport all of those people. No one within the Department of Homeland Security thinks that that's even plausible from a resource perspective or from a social perspective, just from the view of the general public deporting that many people. But because it's been mainly a resource problem, any increase that we would see from a new president, from a new administration, would be devastating for families. So even though the policies couldn't change, a president that wanted to be aggressive about immigration enforcement and wanted to dramatically expand enforcement could do it, and could do it quite quickly, I'm sure.
Without congressional approval as well. So this is something that could come straight from the executive, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. There would be budget issues with tripling ICE enforcement. And so there would be budget consequences that Congress would have to deal with. But the other concerning factor is, at least for the first 2 years of a potential Trump administration, he would also have Republican-controlled Congress of Representatives and Senate. And so the likelihood of them getting through the kind of immigration enforcement policies that some on the far, far right have dreamt about but have simply not been practical or possible could become very real. And we've already seen in the Obama administration a dramatic increase in deportations from across the United States. We've seen growing family detention. We've seen a lot of asylum seekers turn back at the border. So we're already seeing policy which has become more restrictive and more hurtful to immigrant families. But things could get probably unimaginably worse with an administration that really wanted to be aggressive.
Yeah, I mean, maybe you could talk a little bit more about that as well. I mean, some of the voices that we've been hearing within the Republican Party have raised this issue itself. You know, this is important for families, for ordinary people who we may not see as the target for the sort of criminalization that Trump's policy is calling for. What would be some of the implications for, you know, ordinary migrant populations, but also ordinary U.S. citizens?
Sure. So the division that the Republican Party has long tried to make here is to distinguish between criminal migrants who they see as justifiable for deportation and families. So trying to be the Republican Party is really struggling with a changing demographics in the United States. And they see Latinos as Latino families, especially, as a potential growing voter pool. So they're trying to parse the immigrant population in terms of criminal and non-criminal. In practice, this distinction doesn't hold very hard and fast. We know that in most jurisdictions where immigrants are deported, up to half, sometimes more than half of those who are deported on quote unquote criminal grounds are arrested on traffic violations. So traffic violations in the United States is a criminal matter,
right?
not a civil matter. So those are not the kind of criminal charges that people imagine when they think of criminals. The more complicated reality, though, is that a lot of immigrants who are here and who have overstayed a visa or who came without papers, they marry U.S. citizens, they have children who are U.S. citizens, they have parents who are U.S. citizens. And more often than not, when those families, when there are medical issues, it's even more often the undocumented family members who are doing the primary care, direct care to the family, and who are providing income. For instance, I worked with a case here about a year ago with the father was undocumented from Mexico, the wife was a U.S. citizen, and the son was a U.S. citizen. He was about to be deported himself. Eventually, he was able to remain here at least temporarily. But both the wife and the child had medical issues, and so he was the primary caregiver. Both in terms of income and direct care. And so the reality is that even if these enforcement policies were exacerbated, the effect on U.S. citizens would be dramatic. I mean, there's simply no easy way to say that, there's no neighborhood where undocumented immigrants just go and live and stay inside these streets. I mean, they're part of society. They work, they marry, they have relationships. So the effect would be dramatic, not just on immigrants, but on citizens.
And on that note, I think, I mean, there's been the use of the word Hitler has been quite prominent in recent discussions. But quite surprisingly, from also that connotation of police forces in jackboots going door to door has come from within the Republican Party itself, from outsider observers, unlikely sources like Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that. I mean, are we seeing the possibility of a very different type of U.S. state in the making?
I think that there's legitimate concern that the U.S. is taking a hard right turn towards not just right politics, but towards fascism. And I think that's clear not only in the explicit language that Trump has been promoting and in lots and lots of reports of observers at Trump rallies who are using explicit ethnic and racial slurs, not just about Muslims and African Americans, but Latinos and women. And I think that the concern is legitimate. There's also there's a real rise in white supremacist activity within some of the Trump campaign events and also alongside it. And some of that has erupted in violence as well. Recent right. case in California, there was a stabbing in California around a white supremacist event. And so I think we are seeing some actual, a real turn towards hard right, racial and nationalist politics that we haven't seen in a long time. the comparison to Hitler, I think, it's interesting that it's coming from within the Republican Party, right? And it's bizarre in a world where Ted Cruz, actually, who again is far, far right from most Republican candidates. I mean, really world away from even John McCain in 2008, right? Where someone as far right as Ted Cruz is using Hitler as a symbol to push off against someone like Trump, I think really symbolizes just how divided and how far right the Republican Party has become.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard for, I guess, outsiders, unless you're a super fanatic of U.S. electoral politics, to understand some of these implications and what's happening. I mean, for us, we see, I guess, what's playing out at the presidential level in the big theater and the big game. But, I mean, do you see Trump's rise as having larger consequences, perhaps down the ballot in years to come?
Yeah, I really do. So at a street level, I think, like we said, if he does succeed in becoming president and directs a lot more resources towards immigration enforcement, we could see what would amount to, some of the, we see raids here even in Ohio and Michigan, including border states, right? We see these raids happening. We see, even some door-to-door activity from ICE officers. With an expanded immigration enforcement apparatus, that could become much more of a very present reality. And the government at this point is kind of primed to do it. They have the information available for the addresses and family members of a lot of immigrants. So a really aggressive president could actually do that. I think the other knock-on effect, though, of the Trump campaign is whether or not he succeeds in becoming president. He seems to have made the absurd acceptable at this point.
Could you say a little bit more about that? Yeah.
So there's now, people are saying it's become sort of more widely acceptable than I think we ever would have imagined to denigrate a lot of racial minorities and social minorities and immigrants in particular in a way that would have been unimaginable. I mean, even just a few years ago. So I think the real effect of the Trump campaign is to actually open up space for far right white supremacist groups to begin recruiting and to begin growing in a way that they haven't in a long time. And so it's not just certainly many within the Republican Party are against Trump, but the groundswell of support that he has, and the fact that his language and his discourse is that acceptable and to so many people indicates that whether or not he wins, there will be, I think, some long-term consequences to this revival of what I think is proper to call white supremacy, whether that's formal membership in white supremacist groups or violence that's organized around racial superiority and national superiority.
Well, that's a really disturbing picture. I think we've already become fearful enough of what's happening on the other side of Atlantic. But Austin, your words give us a lot more food for thought. So thanks for appearing on the podcast. We'd love to have you back sometime. For those of you interested in finding out more about Austin's research, you can go to his staff page at the State University of Ohio State University. And he also has a recently published article with Matt Coleman, which talks about devolution of immigration authority in precisely these terms. And you can find out more about that on our blog. Monday Morning Meetings on Migration is a podcast run by the Institute for Migration and Ethnic Studies at the University of Amsterdam. The podcast can be accessed at our 4mpodcast.com, our blog page, or through iTunes. And you can also sign up for updates through our Twitter and Facebook accounts. If you have suggestions about a story you'd like us to feature, or would like to post an audio rejoinder to something that's been said on a previous podcast, please send us an email at imes@uva.nl.